Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Legacy Leaders Radio.
Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon, everybody in Atlanta, Georgia, and around the world listening into Legacy Leader Radio. We have a great show today. We're going to get rock and roll with that show in just a few minutes. But first of all, before we get started, I'd like to say congratulations to my co-host and producer who's in their studio today, who just got married and back from his honeymoon. Say hello, Michael.
Oh, it's good to be back, Jack. It's good to be back. It's been a while. I haven't been a part of the show in probably like 3 weeks, something like that.
Yeah. I had a wonderful Krista. She was in on the show with me, and she's a wonderful, talented 28-year-old young lady. And she's single, ladies and gentlemen. Those of you listening on the show that didn't know, she's single, so she's out there. And I'd like to say, before the show started, you telling me that it was great to be married because of what? Why?
Dinner's on the table every night. Well, it's funny. She's a kindergarten teacher. So she's almost kind of stir crazy around the house now trying to find things to get done.
Yeah. And so since she's a kindergarten teacher, it's easy for her to communicate with you.
Oh, okay. Extremely easy.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, ladies and gentlemen, let's go ahead and just get to the show. You know, the reason why we have the show, Legacy Leaders Radio, is to bring people who make a difference in our community, not only locally here in Atlanta area, but also people around the world, people that make a difference, people who bring talent, skills, and bring energy to people's lives and help them be the best and brightest of who they are. And that plays right into my ballpark here for today. I have the honor and the pleasure of introducing you all to the CEO and president of IPET Coaching, Luke Iorio. Luke, please say hello to the audience.
Hi there, everybody. Jack, thanks for having me. Been looking forward to it.
You're right. Great. Luke, tell us, let's go ahead and get some of the formalities out of the way. Tell us about who you are, what IPET Coaching is, and what it's all about. Let's go ahead and just get rock and roll and where you're located.
You got it. Yeah, Jack, we're based here actually out of Shrewsbury, New Jersey, about the northern end of the Jersey Shore. IPEC itself, we're an organization that is really about empowering and engaging individuals to take on leadership roles as well as become certified coaches. And so, you know, there's a lot of individuals that are out there that want to put their life experiences, their work experiences, their expertise to use in terms of giving back to others, helping them learn those lessons a lot faster than we may have learned them through life. And they do that either by becoming a coach or potentially actually using some of that knowledge and using some of that approach, those approaches to take it back into their organizations, build greater engagements, build higher dynamic, high performance teams, and really help them kind of bring more out of themselves.
Okay. How long's the program, Luke, may I ask?
Our core program is 7 months long. That's the coach certification program that's available to the public. When we work with organizations, because we do a lot of work with both, you know, corporations inside of education, nonprofits, government, those programs might be as short as 4 months to as much as a year or longer.
I see. And would it be safe to say, can I assume, I know we don't assume in the coaching world, but would it be safe to say that people will go through the IPET coaching training to learn more about themselves?
Absolutely. You know, and it's one of the things that drew me into the field. You know, a lot of individuals that go into coaching, it's because they have a value around continual learning. They have a value around growth, as well as this value of being of help and service to others. And it's one of the things that drew me into the field. I was, you know, formerly, prior to getting into IPEC, I've been the CEO for the past 4.5 years, but I've been a part of IPEC for almost 10 now. And I came out of the consulting field, mostly in the entrepreneurial arena, small cap businesses under about $30-35 million in revenue. And what I found is in working with those organizations and even trying to build my own consulting practice, there's so much personal development work and leadership development work that you need to go through to really kind of master who you are and really understand who you are and how you want to show up and what you stand for. And that's going to impact the way you show up in this world. And so there's a lot of that that you actually go through as part of any of our programs, because we want people to really truly understand who they are, because in understanding who you are, you understand a lot more about not only what you do, but how you do it, really how you show up in this world.
Yeah, and I'm totally getting that. And so based upon what you just got through, told what you said to me and listening for our audience out there, I think, and my take on this is you can read as many books as you want. You can go to any as many seminars as you want. You can go to many webinars as you want. You can sit there and pay all kinds of money to listen to great, great thought leaders, people who have written great books. You and I both know who those people are, who have written great books. But unless you know who you are, and I underline that, unless you know who you are as a man or a woman, those books don't make a doggone bit of difference if you don't know your own core belief and individual style to be able to put those books into practice. Am I on track here with you, Luke, or am I off?
Jack, you're spot on. I was just giving a talk yesterday to a bunch of entrepreneurs, and they were, you know, a couple of different questions were coming up. Well, should I do, you know, my sales process this way? Should I do my business development that way? And every single time they're looking for kind of that silver bullet, and it's very similar to my consulting days. And it's kind of like the programs that you described. There's so many great programs. They're on CD and books and everything else, and they look great when they're in the cellophane sitting on your shelf because they never get opened. But they've got all this advice and all of this how to do it, and this is the one way to do it. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, the only way that matters is the way that you are going to do it.
Very good.
And that's really the translation of where coaching takes over, so you understand right. who you are, so you can understand uniquely, how does this apply to me? How do I use it? How do I make it fit who I am? And that's where people get lost up, and really they see all this advice and they try to be someone else as opposed to incorporating that advice into who they are.
It sounds to me that you're kind of doing two things that people don't really like to do. Okay, and I'm going to touch on the first one here. The first one is you are promoting self-accountability.
Mm-hmm.
So explain to me, because I know, you know, every organization has problems, but I'm not part of it. I'm not part of the problem, right? I'm doing everything right. How do you get people out of that mindset and towards the path?
Yeah, it's everybody else is wrong. Right, exactly. Everybody else is wrong, but except for me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I think one of the things and one of the reasons why that attitude is honestly, I think it's very prevalent in a lot of organizational cultures that are out there, is that they're reflecting back to the organization exactly what they believe they're receiving. And so they're putting the blame back on an organization. The organization's putting blame back down on the employees. And at the end of the day, the thing that everybody's looking for, the word that they're going to use for it is respect, mm-hmm. which I actually think is a loaded value. I think it leads to a lot of arguments and conflict. What they're actually looking for when they use a word like respect is they're looking for understanding. And that's when we get into things like listening, really understanding what a person's agenda is, understanding how we're going to gain their buy-in to create the type of change that we're looking for. And so it's kind of like both sides are looking at the other side to change first,
right?
As opposed to anybody saying, you know what, I'm going to be the person to take the lead. I'm not saying anybody's wrong. I'm just going to create a new space so we can have a more constructive conversation.
So
those are the individuals that are the leaders in organizations that people rally around.
Are you finding that sometimes the person that's being stubborn is the one writing the check? And how hard is it to kind of, you know, tiptoe around that also? I mean, because, you know, he's your client, right? But how do you make him see maybe how what he could do better in a delicate way, to put it nicely?
Well, honestly, the quickest way is it's really a matter of asking the questions of, you know, what is it that you really want? And they'll tell you, you know, I want this type of change. I want to see these types of things. I want X, Y, or Z. And then it's simply asking them the question of, okay, so based on the approach that you're taking right now, how well are you getting that? How effectively are you creating what it is that you want right now? Because most of the time what they need to be able to take a look at is if this is my goal, if this is the environment, the team, the culture, whatever it is that I want to create, at some point I need to take a look at how effective am I in creating that?
Yeah,
and so somewhere in there, they're going to identify, even if they're only 1% shy of where they want to be, they're either 1% or 99% shy of where they want to be. They'll identify where they are on that spectrum.
What I got out of that comment, Luke, was how hard is it to bring the client to the table and have them look in the mirror and ask the question about I?
You know, it's actually, I have found more often than not, it's actually not as challenging as most would think.
Okay.
It's challenging when we're in a public environment, meaning that it feels like we're on display for others because then we have our ego involved. We've got this facade that we've got to put out there for everybody.
Yep.
But when you get into a personal conversation with somebody who, frankly, won't even engage with a coach or any other type of an advisor, consultant, or anything out there, unless they felt some change was needed. And so they're already acknowledging that some form of change is needed. And as you help them clarify what the circumstances are, and even tell them, in times if they're not willing to just immediately own up to their role in it, you can always use, you know, statements and get their mind wrapped around, listen, I'm not telling you that you've been part of the problem in the past, but I am telling you that you're part of the solution going forward. And the only way that you're going to do something different going forward is you've got to change your approach. Otherwise, definition of insanity. You do the same thing over and over again, you get the same result.
Are we
so you help them acknowledge being part of the solution.
Are we finding, Luke, that if you get somebody behind closed doors, mm-hmm. where they don't have to put the facade on, you can get their pride in check, get their ego in check, and go, hey, look, what really is going on here? How can I talk to you? How do you want me to communicate with you? Tell me what's really happening here that they don't know.
I find that all the time.
Yeah.
You get them into that private environment, you have a very different conversation.
Right, and you develop that by, and I'm going to put my my hat on here, my coaching hat on, that is through confidentiality, trust, and when the person knows they're in a safe place, they're in a place where they know that they can speak freely and get to the heart of things, they will be more likely to open up to you. Am I on track here?
You're absolutely on track.
Okay.
You know, it's we're asking people at any given time, you know, everybody's going to have their own reaction to change.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, the reaction they're having around change is uncertainty.
Okay.
They're removing something that people really highly value, especially right now in a constantly changing world. They want to rely on things. They want to have a certain dependency on certain, you know, have certainty in some areas of their life and work. And you're asking them to chip away at some of the things that they're certain of.
Yeah.
Naturally going to bring up some, you know, emotion and some blocks and some hesitancy to be able to move forward. And you've got to have that rapport built with them and built for that trust to say, listen, I'm not saying you're going to run out of this office right now and make all these changes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying let's have a conversation of what could be.
Yeah.
Let's just have the what-if conversation.
What would change?
And walk away and talk through it in terms of how you ultimately may get there.
What would the change look like in your organization if this?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me, Luke, what type of tools does IPEC have available? Okay, I'm the president and CEO of Company X, and I go to work every day, and I see my receptionist or I see my front office people. They're not engaged. The kind of mediocrity seems to be the norm. People just show up to be showing up. You know, they're getting a paycheck. They just do enough just to get you off their back.
And to not get fired.
And not get fired. Yeah, there you go.
Right.
And
client engagement.
Yeah. And then I go to my back room. I go to my office. I sit down and I'm looking in the mirror and I'm going, what the heck do I need to do? And I see this number. I see this New Jersey number and I call up IPEC and then I give you a call. How does it go from there? Talk to me, Luke.
So very first thing that you want to do with any type of, it doesn't matter if it's an organization or an individual client, is where we already start, which is you want to get them to envision. Mm-hmm. And if they're calling you because they are not satisfied with whatever the team is showing up at, the apathy, the disengagement, the lack of extra commitment, whatever that is, then there's probably something that they believe it should be instead, or something that they certainly would like instead.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that you help them get clear on what that vision could be and to really put themselves in it, it's not just that, hey, I want to have a more engaged workforce or all these vague generalities that people can throw out. It's, well, if they're more engaged, what will you notice that's different? How will the conversations be different? How will they answer the phone different? How will the sales process be handled differently? How will meetings be different? So you want to help them create a real detailed view of what it is that they're looking to create so you can then have more of a strategy conversation of what are then some of the types of things that need to change within the organization. Now, to get into a more robust strategy, you've really got to move from envision to what I refer to as unfiltering reality, because
mm-hmm.
we all have our various lenses that we see the world through.
Yeah.
We've got our own way of showing up based off of how we perceive the world. And you've really got to tear down those lenses so that you can really see the truth behind what's going on. And sometimes that's the black and white. It's, you know, it's easy to talk about business processes and strategic plans we need to execute. It's a lot harder to talk about the fact that we literally see things from different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the stuff that you've got to help people get into is, you know, what are the interpretations, the assumptions, the perceptions that are in play that are either driving or holding back this organization? Because we may have a great strategy, but if we're going to see or be at odds with how we want to execute it, we can't have a conversation as to why I view it so differently than you, then we're going to be at odds and that strategy is never going to get off the ground. And that's usually actually what's holding back the culture and holding back, I'm sorry, the performance of any given organization. I consulted for a lot of businesses. I've coached hundreds of coaches, executives, entrepreneurs, you name it, I've coached it. And I've almost never seen it be a question of strategy and ability inside of an organization. I've almost always seen it as what's behind it. I mean, what's the energy, the engagement, the attitude, the motivation that is holding them back from putting that strategy fully into use or taking advantage of the innate ability that's already sitting there.
Tell me more about energy, Luke.
So when I talk about energy, it can be described in multiple ways. One is, part of your energy is reflective of just the way that you perceive what's mm-hmm. going on around you.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you can look at an event and you know, a car accident happens right in front of everybody, and you ask seven people who witnessed that event, and they're going to describe it seven different ways mm-hmm. because they literally might have different vantage points. Well, our energy is reflective of the way that we perceive things. So we can see, one person can perceive an event as completely stressful and be broken down by it and have anxiety over it. Another person can see that same exact situation and get really excited by the opportunity in it. Part of energy is helping deconstruct where do those attitudes come from? Where do those perceptions come from? That's one part of it. The other part of it is on the engagement side of things. The engagement side is all of this incredible capacity that we have, all the brain power, all the energetic, emotional power of what we've got, all the ability and talent that we have, how much of it are we actually going to use?
Yeah.
And that's what the engagement side of energy is going to determine, is how much we can actually use. Where's your buy-in at? How much do you really believe in? How clear are you? How focused are you? How connected are you to what it is that you're about to use all of your talent for? So energy has the attitude perception side of it. It also has the engagement side of it. And that's a big piece of a lot of the work that we teach our coaches as well as we do with these organizations. And we've had some very profound results in terms of the shifts that go on with the culture and performance of an organization when they begin to recognize what these energetic influences are.
So what I'm getting here is we got two sides of the story here with IPEC. We've got we have training effective mm-hmm. energetic coaches, and then we have the IPEC side where you actually yourself and your team go in and to help make change within teams and organizations and units. Am I on track here, Luke?
Yeah, we're very often for the organizational side, we're brought in to lead transformational projects, and it's very often that an organization will have the business strategy that they want to execute,
yeah.
but they haven't yet matched that business strategy with the leadership and people strategy that they need to have.
All right, so
we help bring in the leadership, people, strategy, and training.
Okay, so
train our coaches to do the same thing with their individual clients.
All right, so let's talk about that just for a second on the business side. So we have a CEO or president or a manager that says, gosh, you know, I really need this. You sit down with them and you map out a strategy. Okay, what does your vision look like? What does success look like for you? What does success look like at the end of the day? And you start to map that out. How do you get them to re-engage their employees? Is there a tool, a plan, or something you can do to, okay, how do you present that to those employees?
So when you're helping whether it's the individual leader or a leadership team that's coming in and sponsoring a project, and you get them to put that vision together, one of the things you want to make sure is very clear in that vision is what's the central rallying point? What's the central theme, the central initiative, the central strategy that everything is going to relate to and align to? And then ultimately, there is a process by which you want to be able to engage the team members, employees that you're leading. You want them to have certain input into that and to be able to say, you know, this is when we're crafting a vision, what are some of the elements that you see us doing really well? What are some of the elements that you see us falling down on? What are some of the things that you believe need to change? What are some of the things we just simply need to optimize? And you want to be able to elicit that feedback as part of that overall strategy process. so that the individuals that you roll the strategy out to, they can see the element of contribution that they've had in shaping the direction that you're about to go in. That's the ideal scenario. And then you're going to rapid development program, which I can talk about in a moment, around that, to help them match the leadership and people side to execute on that plan. Now, that's the ideal, is you pull them in right from the get-go. If you don't pull them in right from the get-go, that's okay. Sometimes strategy does occasionally come top-down. That makes sense. It doesn't mean that you just skipped the buy-in process. It means that you unfold what it is that is this central rallying point in the vision, and then you seek feedback. You say, guys, this is where it is that we want to go. What do you think we've missed? What do you think is on target? What do you think are the things that are going to be major drivers to help us get this done? So you start to ask questions to help them put themselves into that vision. The development program that we then, or the type of development program that you want to put in place, like what we do, is then mapped around the idea of who are going to be the key leaders and key influencers as part of moving that strategy forward. And I say that very specifically in terms of leaders and influencers, because this isn't necessarily about job title. And that's one of the things that is changing rapidly inside of corporate America, is that job titles aren't necessarily the most important thing anymore, because there are individuals who may not have a job title who are significantly more influential on the performance and culture of an organization than the person in the position.
Oh, I totally agree.
You want to know who are those key leaders and influencers that are going to help bring this initiative forward. Because if you hit the right leaders from the get-go, the 10%, sometimes even only 5% of a workforce, maybe even smaller, you've actually done it with 1% before. When you hit the right influencers, it creates a cascade ripple effect across an initiative, across an organization. So for us, it's about how do we, once we get them engaged in the initiative that they're moving towards, and there's buy-in there, it's then wrapping the program around them to equip them with the leadership approach that's going to help them continually build buy-in, have more conscious-driven communication and conversations, and how to continue to challenge the teams that they lead to move forward and perform and be engaged as you go. They've got to learn those skills, because that's not something that's really taught in you're not going to learn this in class.
So are you finding that a lot of times you are fixing companies or organizations when they're broken, or do you get the chance to maintain as well?
It's actually kind of fun, and I like to think of it as when things are going poorly, and we've worked with a couple of organizations, I wouldn't even term it as broken, because to me, that's actually a really advantageous point, because when something is going in a poor direction, a very challenging direction for an organization, they're actually typically, not always, but typically, they're more willing to let go of the baggage, meaning they're more willing to let go of some of the assumptions about how things used to work and say, we've got to change. We've got to make some, we've got to let go of some of the things that haven't worked. So, help us figure out what those are. That's kind of fun. Challenging an organization that's already doing good and asking them to change things when things are going well, that actually at times could be a whole lot tougher.
So how do you attack that from a consulting standpoint?
When they're doing well?
Yeah.
It usually is actually, again, same type, it's a lot of similar types of processes, is that you want to coach them through the vision of what could be. Because it's really almost what you're looking for is you want them to picture what great is, right? The old good to great story.
You
want them to picture what that greatness looks like. And then when they have that more ideal picture in their head, you now want to put pressure on what are all of the things that right now are working, but you know that you are settling for good enough in some way, and that if you continue to settle for good enough, then that greatness can never actually come out for this organization. That innovation can't pop for this organization. What you're doing is you're actually creating, you're almost creating conscious pain points inside the organization.
Well, keep them hungry, right?
These are things that they could put up with if they didn't realize how much more they could be. The vision of what they could be, now they're more willing to let go.
Luke, tell me about maintenance now. So you've come into an organization, IPEC's come into an organization. You've had those fierce conversations, those open conversations with them, and you said, okay, here's my vision, here's how I want to show up, here's how what I want to do. And IPEC is, and I know you guys are the best. You're good at what you do. And how do you maintain it? Okay, all right. How do you stop the company from sliding back to where they were? What does that process look like for IPEC?
Great one. So the immediate mental switch I'd make is even just in a word. As opposed to maintenance, I'd talk about sustainability. So sustainability comes from a few things. One is that when we go into an organization, we are planning our obsolescence from the day that we walk in. Because if the knowledge and the expertise that created change and embedded that in the organization stays with us, we are no good to that organization. It's got to be built in. They've got to develop that capacity.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of, when I talked about developing those leaders, we're developing them and teaching them and training them and coaching them through literally how to do what we do, because we want them to keep that going forward. The next thing is you have to have a very intentional cascade process in that organization.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning
sure.
that you may start with an original team. And I can tell you, if you know, one of the Fortune 500s that we worked with, we started with only the top 60 executives in their organization. But then based on this cascade process we built, those 60 executives ultimately then became the coaches and mentors to about another 500 individuals over the course of the next 12 months. Well, that collective group of just under 600 represented about 1% of the population of the company. It actually, that 1% literally was able to embed the philosophy, the approach, the vision of what they were creating, as well as the skill set and conversations we were helping them have. That 1% was able to embed it, because they were now further cascaded into the organization, and then they're shown where to focus their attention. So when you coach an organization to create this cascade effect, you want them to recognize not only how they're changing as individuals, but you also want them to be very conscious of the social layer in an organization.
So
how do you insert the social layer?
And you're also, well, and if I could just add to that, you're also increasing their circle of influence within an organization.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we were doing two things in that social layer. One was exactly what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
We're expanding their network so that they're now tapped into more of the hub, the engagement grid or energy grid of that organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing is you're showing them how to use those moments in time in every organization that are so underutilized, and they're called conversations and meetings. That's it. They can now use conversations, whether informally or formally with individuals,
mm-hmm.
or in meetings with groups and large groups, and use them in a very different way so that these moments in time now create very significant impact and influence for the organization that pay off in a large manner. And most of the time, those moments, frankly, they pass by on a day in and day out, week in and week out basis. They go into those moments much more
right.
conscious, knowing the type of impact they want to have.
So you get the call, you get out there, you kind of assess what they need. Do you have just one big speaking engagement, a couple of breakout sessions? How do you guys attack this from a long-term standpoint, or even from just a, like you said, there's no magic bullet. So
right.
everyone has their own paradigm. So how do you do this?
I can tell you our paradigm and why we do it that way. I don't believe in the idea of just the one big speaking engagement. You know, that might be great to introduce people to a concept,
yeah.
but it's not going to create change. And so our process is intentionally, that's why I mentioned incorporations, our short programs are 4 months long, and typically there are 5 to 8 months on probably the average range.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because we want to expose them to a certain amount of material and skills and information, and then we want to walk them through intense, conscious practice over and over and over again, partly through in-person training and development programs, partly through mentors and executive coaching work that they do, and other forms of application. Then you give them more information, and then you help them integrate it and apply it again. Then you give them more information, integrate and apply again. So it's got to be a very intentionally iterative, reflective practice
sure.
that they go through, because that's ultimately what's going to ingrain that behavior so it becomes sustainable.
Well, this is the part of the show where I'm going to do full disclosure. You ready? Ready, Luke?
Ready for it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know that I am an IPEC graduate. I went through coaching with IPEC about 4 years ago, and it was one of the most intense, self-reflecting, engaging learning experiences of my life. And I'll, there's a couple of reasons why I went through it. One of the reasons why I went through coach training is because I was working with a coach. Some of you may have known, I actually had Tracy Cleary. She was on my show a couple weeks ago. Very engaging, wonderful young lady, professional coach. And I wanted to know what she knew. I wanted to know what on earth was it about this person, the questions she's asking, the type of engagement she had, the thought process she had. And she went through a formalized coaching training program. And I said, well, I want to know what she knows. And so I sat down at a computer one day and I said, life coaching programs, best in the country. Where do I go? And the top of the list kept coming up. And it was IPEC. And I went, dang, IPEC. Who the hell are these IPEC guys, you know? and it was on a Tuesday. On a Wednesday, I registered, started my pay on a Thursday. And Friday, I was in a class. I was in Tampa, Florida, 14 people in the class, 12 women, 2 men, and if there's ever a time for me to keep my mouth shut, that was at that point right then, yeah. And I went through the full gamut of training with IPEC, and it was, man, what I learned about myself and the wonderful people at IPEC and the students that were in class with me was unbelievable, phenomenal, and definitely was a launching pad for me to other new careers and a transformation as a military member coming out of the military. So I would like to say, first of all, my hat's off to IPEC. Second, thank you very much, Luke. And the third thing is, Luke, will you please tell folks how the coach training process and program works with IPEC and why IPEC is number one in the country?
Well, Jack, first I want to thank you very much for what you shared. And we really are just blessed with some extraordinary people that find IPEC and seem to really kind of resonate with the type of values we have and the type of work that we do. What you ultimately go through is as a trainee through the process. It is about a 7-month-long program. And very much like Jack, what you were saying is there is an element of the program and obviously a little bit more weighted to the beginning of the program, where you are going through a lot of your own self-discovery,
mm-hmm.
and you're really learning a lot more about yourself and peeling back a lot of the layers, those interpretations and some of the baggage and some of the stuff that we've all accumulated through the decades of living and working and leading. And so the reason why we do that, more than anything, is we want our students to understand the power of what it is you're going to then learn to do with others. And so this is not about, and anybody that tells you that coaching is about fixing people is not really truly resonating with the real philosophy behind coaching, because coaching is really about helping people reconnect and rediscover to mm-hmm. who they truly are, who they were truly meant to be and become.
Mm-hmm.
And so we help people do that in the beginning of the program, and it's done through a combination of in-person trainings that are over, initially the first one is over a weekend. There's 3 of these in-person modules throughout the course of the 7 months. And then that continues on in terms of a lot of work that they're doing in between those modules. So even as I was saying in the corporate work, there's a lot of application and integration work. We do the same thing in coach training. So you're working with peers, you're working with a group, you're working with a mentor, you're hearing from subject matter experts on a whole host of topics. And all of that is layered throughout the program as you progress through these individual in-person modules about every 10, 12 weeks. The other element that, 2 other big elements that are there, one of which is that halfway through the program, you actually now have the chance, and Jack, I know you're sure we had this when you came through, you have the ability to specialize. And so we help people almost kind of choose their major, I guess you could say.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So we help them get that specialization and that knowledge around to get leadership or health and relationships or career transition, internal coaching, whatever it is that they need to really take on and master. We form them into those groups so that they can do a deep dive. The other side of it is that since, again, a lot of people who take the program, I'd say about maybe 70%,
mm-hmm.
have the intent of opening a part or full-time practice, we also offer business development. And we help them figure out what does it mean to get started in business? How are you going to go out and get your first clients? How are you going to optimize your business from there? And so the overarching thing and why IPEC has been blessed with the reputation that we have, we are very comprehensive. When people come to us, we're not going to sell them the get trained and certified as a coach in a weekend for $600. We're not playing that game. We're here for true transformation, and we want our coaches to learn that process so that they can be of help in creating transformation for others. And so it's very comprehensive. It's very holistic. And as we were describing in terms of helping people understand who they are, because that changes what you do and how you do it, it's part of these core coaching dynamics that we teach. So people understand not just what are the coaching skills, approaches, and exercises, but they really understand the human conditioning process. Why do we think the way we think, feel the way we feel, act the way we act, mm-hmm. so that when you use one of those techniques or approaches, you're applying it at the right time, for the right reasons, in the right way, for the right result. And it creates a very profound impact, and we hear regularly from organizations that our coaches can create change faster than any other coach or advisor that they've worked with, and it's because they know how to get to the core of what's going on rapidly.
When you get to the core, tell me about some of the emotional moments. I can tell you some of mine, but you know, from some of my clients, but this is not about me. Mm-hmm. When you finally get to the core, one of the toughest questions I've ever asked somebody, easy question, but it's a tough person to answer, is who are you? Tell me who you are. What are some of the aha moments, Luke, that you've had and that some of your coaches shared and experienced with you when you have good certified professional coaches and when they work with people, some of the aha moments that you've had in the past?
You know, I think I'll give you one of the biggest. This was an extraordinary client that I had the blessing of working with, and it was actually outside the corporate arena, which is actually where the majority of my work is. It was an individual who was becoming a coach, and I worked with her as she'd come through the program. And she had lost her husband to cancer when he was only in his mid-30s. And it took her many years to recover and put the pieces back together for her life. Came through the coaching program, and that was one of the things, even though she tried a lot of other modalities and therapy and everything else, mm-hmm. coaching just seemed to put all the pieces together for her. And so when she came out of the program, she was trying to figure out who it was that she was going to work with, and she was kind of struggling on that and worried about, was she really going to follow through? And the idea came up that she was going to work in transition, and specifically that she was going to work around the idea of transition and well-being, but didn't want to handle anything to do with cancer survivorship because it would be too close to home. Well, by accident, through the coaching, and I shouldn't call it accident, I should call it happenstance, frankly, is that through the coaching process, she opened herself up because somebody who had reached out to her who was a cancer survivor and was really struggling and going through challenges, kind of reassimilating to her life. This is a slightly older woman in about her 60s who literally wasn't even leaving her home at this point. She had no energy to do anything. She said she'd be about a 2 on the energy scale of 1 to 10, 10 being a lot of energy. And after just 3 coaching sessions with my client, this woman was taking her family out to dinner again. She had signed herself up at a local community center with a gym so she could feel like she was getting healthy. She was taking daily walks. She was doing all these things and really taking ownership over her life again. And my client calls me up basically in tears saying, I'd been running away from this so long, and I realized that this actually is the message and the voice that I was meant to have, is to help these survivors find their voice and find their lives again. And that's exactly what she's doing. So the point of you know, sharing that specific client story is that very often people actually run away from the essence of who they are and even some of the pain points in their life, only to find that those pain points are actually a way of them, in all likelihood, finding more out about themselves than they've ever seen before and rediscovering a part of themselves that they have confidence in and they can believe in mm-hmm. and that they can connect with other people from. And when you peel back all of the fear, you peel back all the things of, no, it's going to be too painful, or I've been told it's smarter for me to go in this direction, it's more logical for me to go in this direction. When you peel away all of those kind of false beliefs that are there, and you get to really, this is what I'm meant to do, and you connect to that, all of a sudden everything unfolds in front of you. People start responding to you differently. People start being led by you differently.
Yeah.
They get inspired. They get motivated. And it just creates just this extraordinary current. Ripple that goes to all the people you connect to.
Yeah,
I've seen that time and time and time again with clients.
Yeah, I can personally and professionally relate to what you just said, Luke. And it's sometimes, you know, we go through those painful moments, and then once we get through them, we look back and we go, "Damn, what did I learn from that?" And there's a reason. And this is where I was meant to be, and I take that energy and I put it into a positive mode, and where I help and work with other people. You mentioned the scale. I'm familiar with the energetic self-perception chart. I don't think our listeners are, a lot of our listeners. I know we have a lot of IPEC folks listening today, and we have a lot of non-IPEC people, non-coaches. Can you just give us a brief synopsis of the energetic self-perception chart?
Sure. So when I described energy before, I talked about a reflection of both our perceptions and our attitude, as well as the engagement side of energy. So the energetic self-perception chart, really reflective of the seven levels of energy, these seven different, you could call it levels or buckets of perception that we have. And so this was all laid out in my business partner, Bruce Schneider, his best-selling book, Energy Leadership, lays out all seven levels of energy. And what this really helps us do is deconstruct our of seeing, thinking, feeling, and acting within this world. So it helps us understand, why have we been conditioned to respond in the ways that we do? Why do we react the way that we do? And so of these seven levels of energy, two are what we call, you know, using some of our own jargon, catabolic. Five of these levels are anabolic. Mm-hmm. Catabolic is actually a physiological process. It's something that our bodies go through to pull energy out of the cells and muscles and tissue that we have in order to counteract stress. So it literally drains our body of energy for a quick energetic boost to counteract whatever we're facing. That process effectively is triggered by the way we perceive something, because if you don't perceive it as stressful, you wouldn't go into that type of process.
Mm-hmm.
So what we don't realize is how many of us actually operate under that stress reaction, under that depleting, draining type of energy.
Day-to-day.
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 And, mm-hmm. and I'll get to anabolic, the flip side of that anabolic in a moment. But if you think of, out of a five-day work week, okay, let's assume that every one of those 5 days, you've got a certain decent amount of energy that you begin every day with. And maybe maybe you're motivated, maybe you're positive, maybe not as much, but there's a certain amount of energy you begin the day with. How many of those 5 days a week do you end the day with less or significantly less energy than you began with? And I'm not just talking about being physically spent from a good day of work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking spiritually, emotionally, mentally drained, right?
Yeah.
And so if you think about, out of those 5 days, I've done this and I've spoken in front of a lot of corporations, and most of the time, most of the executives and professionals in the room will say probably about 4 days out of five they feel that way. That'll give you an indication of how often you're probably operating more from that catabolic, drained, depleting type mindset and engagement level. The flip side is anabolic, again, a natural process we go through, where stress, as opposed to being something that drains us, stress is actually something that we use to build ourselves, to be constructive.
Mm-hmm.
You think of it almost as when you're lifting weights. Technically, when you lift weights, your muscles get very, very, very tiny tears in them, but then they reform in a bigger and stronger manner. Anabolic energy basically does the same thing. It's how can we use the environment that's out there? How can we be open to all the possibilities of what's coming our way and use that in a manner that moves us forward, creates more capacity for us, engages us further, creates more purpose and opportunity in front of us. And so these two big buckets of energy types that fall across these seven levels, these are things that we have learned. We've learned how to think this way, see this way, feel this way throughout the entire course of our life. We didn't know that this type of stuff was going on, and therefore we didn't choose our patterns consciously. At least 99.9% of us didn't. And so this construct of energy leadership, also something that's taught within our trainings and assessments we do and everything else, this is one of the things that we help people see. And when they go through an assessment like this, or even just understand these seven levels and energy leadership, they really begin to see their patterns. And they go, wow, you know, I had no idea. I just never thought of it, that I react with a whole lot of frustration
mm-hmm.
when
mm-hmm.
certain things don't go my way. And I didn't realize that that's because I'm saying, if things don't go as expected, I don't really believe that I can create change, or I believe that it's somebody else has gotten in my way. And then I allow that frustration to frankly just tear apart the results that I was after in the first place.
We become victims. So we have a victim mentality.
And then we become victims to it.
Yeah.
And so certain thoughts lead to certain emotions, lead to certain behaviors and actions and results. Mm-hmm. This energy leadership deconstructs that so that somebody can look at what their patterns are right now and decide, where is it that I would like to be, and then actually have a system and process, and exactly what our coaches do, help people create that for themselves.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned catabolic and anabolic, and I'm just going to clarify for my audience. Mm-hmm. The catabolic is the bad stuff. The catabolic is like cancer. It eats us up. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Yes, and that's the first two levels. We talk about victim and conflict. And the anabolic, that's the cool stuff. That's the neat stuff that makes us happy, happier people. And we can consciously put ourselves in there. And that's the good stuff. That's the anabolic energy versus the catabolic. Catabolic, we don't want it. Anabolic energy is what we do want. And I would challenge my listeners and readers and who follow my blogs and follow the website is go define those. Look up anabolic and catabolic, and you'd be quite surprised as what the definitions are of that. It's terrible. The catabolic, I believe, and I'm not a psychologist, and I'm not a medical professional, but what I've read and what I understand and my perception is the catabolic stuff, I do believe, can lead to very hurtful and detrimental physical and psychological effects upon our body.
That is a lot of the research that you'll read when you do take a look at some of this stuff is mm-hmm. when you are draining and depleting your body that often, so for instance, part of catabolic hormone is things like cortisol.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of people have heard the term and heard of cortisol.
Yeah.
It literally is it's meant to flood your body to drain it because you need energy in that moment to counteract the challenge, the problem that you're facing at that moment. If we operate, and so many people have heart disease and cardiac mm-hmm. issues and everything else, because we operate this way for too long. So we are constantly flooding our body with hormones that are literally draining and depleting and pulling the nutrients and vitamins right out of our tissues and muscles and cells.
Yeah. Great. Yeah.
And so
that's crazy.
All of that is based on the types of attitude and perception that you have. And what's amazing is, listen, there's a time and place where we wouldn't have catabolic energy if it didn't serve us in some way. Mm-hmm. It does under a fight and flight response. The challenge is that, we're no longer being chased around by saber-toothed tigers anymore. We're
you
not
can't
there.
Live under that.
Yeah.
we've gotten rid of that, right?
Right.
The challenge is we often view walking into the boardroom just like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hey,
that's
what everything kicks in, and there's different ways of switching around that wiring.
And and this is what I discussed with Tracy a couple weeks ago, is that when you have a catabolic leader or a catabolic manager, a leader or a director or a CEO, and people can, I'm telling you, if you don't think it, you're smoking the weird stuff, because people can pick that up when you walk into a room. If you're a catabolic leader and if you're a negative victim thinking leader, your employees, your people will pick that up, and then it will permeate, it will cascade throughout your team and organization.
Well, and I can even say, to all the listeners out there, if you just want to check this for yourself, the next time that you're in any type of a meeting, I don't care if it's professional, mm-hmm. In the corporate boardroom, or at school with an education, a bunch of colleagues or the teachers and faculty, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
When you walk in, okay, or that if the superintendent, the principal walks in, the manager walks in, whoever it is that walks in the room, watch the physiology of the people in the room.
Bingo.
Do you see them begin to slump? Do you see them begin to cross their arms? Do you see tension in their jaws or in their shoulders or in their necks?
Yeah.
If you see those signs of stress and tension, chances are you've got a read on the energy in the room.
Yeah.
Whereas if you see people sit up, they'd even not quite a smile, but almost a smirk on their face, you see them lean in, you see them still breathing kind of deeply, there's almost a contentedness there, or a joy that's there, that gives you the sign that anabolic energy is in the room.
Yeah.
So I pay attention to that. You will be amazed at the physiological cues you start picking up on.
But this is a choice, right? I mean, it's the same situation, but like you said, it's a perception and it's a choice, and that's something that your guys and gals kind of lead people towards, this way of thinking, right?
It is, because it becomes a choice. So the challenge that we've got is that for so long, we didn't realize that this whole stimulus response equation,
mm-hmm.
we didn't realize that there's actually a tiny little gap between stimulus and response. There's a millisecond that's in there that our mind is making a choice for us.
Sure.
It's making a choice based off of everything we've ever been through in our lives and saying, react this way based on this stimulus.
Oh, yeah.
If mm-hmm. we can slow that down long enough, we can look at what's in that gap. We can look at the filter that's there and help our clients, help our leaders help our employees say, hey, wait a minute, is that really what you want right
mm-hmm,
now?
Mm-hmm,
how
mm-hmm.
closely is that going to get to where you want to be, so that it can become a conscious choice?
And what
until you're aware of that gap, it can't be conscious.
And what gets me, and I've actually started, I've written a book on this, and it comes out next month, by the way. It's a shameless plug, I'm sorry, is that it's when you have an angry or a conflicted leader that knows that, but their pride and ego gets in the way because they're afraid to look up and be different rather than go, you know what, I got a problem. And I'm affecting the bottom line of my organization. I'm affecting my people. I'm affecting my relationships. I'm affecting my family. I'm affecting my kids. I got to get a handle on this. And that's where pride, ego gets in the way. And that's why people got to get a handle on this energy, the catabolic and the anabolic energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, we don't always realize how much that, you know, our whether you want to call it ego, whether you want to call it our agenda, whether you want to call it, you know, our whatever our stuff is that says this is how I want things to be.
Yeah.
We don't realize how much that gets in our way, because most of the time we want things to be that way so that we feel, all the way back to the beginning of this conversation, right?
Yeah.
We feel certain. We can have confidence in something. We can feel that, okay, this over here, if it happens this way, then I can feel like I've got control over something in my life, as opposed to the fact that it's in the releasing of that control, knowing that everything is going to be changing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's the world
mm-hmm.
we live in now, and actually it's going to only happen faster and faster and
right.
faster. We see it time and again, right?
Yeah.
And so the keys for us and why there's so much need around coaching and the work that we're doing in these organizations right now is that when you can say things don't need to happen exactly as I wanted them to,
yeah.
I can roll with it. I can be agile. I can be flexible. I can be adaptable because I know that I can stand on my own 2 feet, figure it out, find purpose in whatever happens,
yep.
and find ways of moving that forward. It's kind of like the, you know, the principles of Aikido. You don't mm-hmm. necessarily push back with resistance. You use the energy that's coming your way and allow that to flow through to the end goal.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, that's a neat way to look at it. But you guys have a very important job, a very sensitive job. And so you really have to trust these guys and gals that go out there and do this on IPEC's behalf. How do you vet them and make sure that they're the guys that you want out there, right? Cause, I mean, they're representing you, and they're doing a very important job.
Absolutely. It's, you know, we've got the two sides of our business. For those that are supporting us and working with us when we're going into organizations, there is a very specific vetting process and that they've got to go through and experience that they've got to have. And there's a lot of oversight and supervision that goes with that for a period of time until we know that they will handle a client exactly as we would. And even then there's still checks and balances that are going to be in place because we are very trusted when we are brought into an organization, and you can never compromise that trust in any way, shape, or form. Even for those coaches that come through our primary coach training program and are going to set up their own practice that are separate from us,
mm-hmm.
they go through a very specific admissions process. This isn't the $600 training that somebody goes and clicks and buys online. This is an application process. This is an institute that they've got to apply to because we need to make sure that they're aligned, not just in terms of kind of the right background to become a coach, but more often than not, it's actually not the competency level we're concerned with.
Mm-hmm.
It's the values.
The value,
we want to know the values of that individual because that's really what we're looking for. If you're in coaching because you think your way is better and you want to manipulate and coerce people to do it your way because you think that'll help make you rich, this is not the right place for you.
Wrong answer. Yeah, that's
yeah,
true.
That's
exactly right. And I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and I said, well, what makes you a good coach? And he said, well, I give great advice. Really?
Mm-mm.
Wrong answer. Yeah, wrong answer. Well, hey, Luke, tell me real quick. Your association with ICF, what does ICF work do for IPEC?
Absolutely. The International Coach Federation is the accrediting body of our industry. So they accredit and audit our program and programs like us. They accredit and audit us on a every couple of year basis. And they maintain the ethics, the competencies, the core skill set that needs to be taught to make sure that any program that represents itself as accredited has been fully vetted and honors that system. Now, our relationship with them is they are our governing body. They're our accrediting agency. We also are, you know, are licensed and regulated in different states by different agencies. We've passed approvals with, you know, other organizations like the Society of Human Resource Managers, gives out a ton of CEUs for taking our program. So we really believe, just like with the ICF, we believe in having that third-party objective type of audit and accreditation process for our programs because it's one of the things that a lot of consumers, if you're looking to get your coaching certification, you've got to be aware of because there's a lot of companies that are out there. They created their own certification, meaning what they're giving you is not a certification. They're giving you a certificate of completion.
Right,
totally
right.
Different.
And I would tell
you. I know a lot of graduates that are getting into big corporations now because they cleared their ranks of uncertified coaches. So it is very important to have a credential by the ICF now.
And I would I totally agree with that. And that's what I was going to tell the audience, please, if you're going to think about becoming a coach, if it's not on the ICF clearance board and approved by ICF, walk away, run away, because it may not be what you need. And so ICF is the governing board for International Coaching Federation is governing board. And I would ask all my listeners and clients and anybody out there, if they don't have ICF certification, then I would say, you know, you need to relook and go someplace else, which is very important. You know, as we get close to the top of the hour here, Luke, I want you to tell me about something, a new initiative that I've heard you talk about called Momentum.
Thanks for that, Jack, because in the fall, beginning in early part of October here in New Jersey, we'll be out to L.A. and Chicago in the early and mid parts of next year. We're creating a new event called Momentum. We're going to be the spearhead behind this, but ultimately we're going to be doing it with other partners, because as an organization, we've graduated now over 7,000 coaches, we've worked with 1,000 other leaders, and as an organization, our community directly and indirectly touches the lives of over 500,000 people and businesses every single year. And so we actually want to accelerate that. We believe that if we can have these more conscious conversations, if we can have that stronger self-leadership and self-accountability and show and help other people in a similar way to help them step into their own greatness, frankly, we just believe we'll have a whole lot more fun as a society. And so we're creating an event to bring this to the public, to help people become much more aware of what coaching is, what our approach is, how this can help you just frankly step into your own potential, into your own greatness, whether you're in your own life, parent, your teacher, educator in healthcare, or whether you're a leader, professional, entrepreneur. And it really is about getting a movement moving forward that is about, we want to change things. We are tired of things being stuck. We're tired of the vitriol and polarity that we see everything down in Washington to even the boardrooms in some of our corporations. We don't want to see that anymore. We want to be part of creating a movement for change. It shows people there's a much more conscious way of doing that. And consciousness doesn't mean sitting on the sidelines meditating somewhere. It means being active. It means being proactive. It means being involved. And this event is going to kick that off with us and some major national partners, because we have a goal of going out after 70 million people.
That's fantastic.
That touches those lives and careers.
That is fantastic. Has this been announced anyplace else other than on Legacy Leader Radio?
This is actually the first time we are publicly announcing it.
Doggone it.
We're going to be launching very soon.
You heard it here first.
Yes.
You heard it here first.
Yes. Yeah, that's fantastic. Once again, it's a Momentum project. And Luke, I want you and your staff and everybody that's listening right now to know, you let me know how I can help you be part of that and promote that the Momentum project. I think that's fantastic. Yeah, especially after the stuff we've seen in the news lately, especially with the schools and the shootings and all this crazy stuff. We've got to get a handle on this madness. We've got to get an absolute handle on this madness. And Luke, I'd like to say this before we close up here as a couple things. I look as coaches as healthy people helping healthy people. Am I on track here?
It's yeah, and you know, a friend of mine used to say, "It's doing well by doing good."
Yeah, there you go.
That's how we like to see things happen here.
Very good. And Luke, I asked you a question before we came on the air, and that was, I want to know what your theme song is. And if you've listened to my shows, you know I always ask my audience, and I always ask my guests, what is your theme song? So everybody at IPEC, all of you listening in headquarters in New Jersey, here, Luke, if you walk into a room and they're going to play your theme song as a CEO and president of IPEC, what would that song be, please?
It's got to be one of the songs I listen to most often to keep me going. And it's Like I Roll by Blackstone Cherry.
Okay. There you go. There you go. You've heard it here
well
first.
Done.
Yeah, very, very well done. And Luke, for my audience, how do we get a hold of you and how do we get people to become coaches and go through your program? Talk to me.
Awesome. You know, best way always is connecting with us online. The core website is IPEC, that's IPEC coaching.com. That's where they can connect with us through the website. We've got a huge following on Facebook, so certainly follow IPEC Coaching on Facebook. Me personally, you can also find me on Twitter, and it's just Luke, L-U-K-E, Iorio, I-O-R-I-O, and that's my handle on Twitter.
Oh, man. Luke, thank you so much. We're getting to the top of the hour here. And any last-minute words or any wisdom? You want to give them a shout-out to your previous coach trainees or any of your students? What do you want to say to them?
Yeah, I want to thank everybody who's been able to tune in today. And really, more than anything else, this is part of what we're sharing around the country right now, is figure out that this year, this is the last year that something is going to go on for yourselves, meaning you're going to leave something behind this year because you know next year is the big moment. You know, this is the time to make it happen, to play full out. And for all the coaches that are out there, figure out what's going to be your one big thing to make happen this year, and then how are you going to help your clients do the same.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you so much, and we'll be talking to you soon. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jack Perry, Legacy to Radio, here in Midtown Atlanta. We had another fantastic, great show with IPET Coaching. We had Luke Iorio on the radio today. And all you great coaches out there, keep it happening, keeping it real, and let's get on the Momentum Project. Thank you all. Ladies and gentlemen, hi, Mom. We are out of here.